I have to admit that my attempt to find similarities between the Hertzian spark transmitter and serving as the inspiration for the Amon Brothers power supply, I have to admit that I may have failed, because when I was looking over all of the simulations, I think it was yesterday when I was working, before I worked on Byron's circuit, I was dismayed that I couldn't find anything that actually was honestly satisfying all the criteria that I require of myself when I set out to produce an OpenUnity simulation. And so the ones that I posted on the wiki text are fudges of one kind or another. I noticed that I had a fudge of a time step, not to exceed 10 milli or microseconds. I hadn't noticed that in the transient analysis settings panel for the simulation run. And when I defaulted that to its normal condition of zero, the simulation didn't give me any overunity. So I was really dismayed. Well, thinking about Nathan and thinking about Byron and the two, it dawned on me, what if the Amon brothers were not doing anything different from Nathan Stubblefield? They simply created a mobile unit that you did not have to bury in the earth in a block of concrete underneath the roots of an old oak tree. What if, because I did get I learned one thing out of the study of the Hertzian spark transmitter, and that is the nature of grounded aerials. If your radio system requires your aerial to be grounded, you ground it. And in fact, that's how General George Spires, or Squires, I think his name was, who invented using trees as aerials, or extension of aerials, in for radio field operators operating in the army wing of the military. They are grounded aerials. But what I learned in studying the Hertzian spark transmitter is that the reason why he has two plates, and possibly the reason why the Amon brothers have two spheres perched atop two copper tubes, is because you can get away without grounding your... If your aerial requires grounding, I got to phrase this correctly. If your aerial requires grounding, you can get away without grounding it, provided you have two aerials rather than one. And each serves as the ground for the other in some kind of alternating fashion, unless it's fixed. So I'm speculating at this point which is which. But regardless, that's what the teaching is. That's what I read up on the internet regarding grounded aerials. So when we look at the Amon brothers, we may be simply looking at the fact that they needed a grounded aerial, but unlike Nathan Stubblefield making use of a tree, they did not have recourse to that, and so they came up and used the same system that Hertz used. So in that sense, there are parallels between what they did and what Hertz did in his spark transmitter, but the parallel may stop there. There's one other parallel, and that is that he had a step-down transformer situation going on. So aside from those two things, there may be nothing else similar at all, because they may not have used a spark gap inside their system. And it may be Byron's system. It may be Byron's circuit. Step-down transformer feeding two capacitors in series, one in and a third one in shunt, and then going on to pass through a full bridge of diodes, rectifying that oscillating electricity into a semblance of DC electricity, in which the voltages are still alternating their polarization, their polarity, while the current is changing its speed. with and keeping in step with the changes of voltage that would impact its speed. So it's not a true DC system like coming from a battery. It's not continuously the same current, but it is the same orientation of current. That much we know a full bridge diode can perform. But the current speed varies in synchronicity with the change in polarity of the voltages that are still allowed to occur. And so it could be that they just have the same circuit that Byron has made use of, but they don't have to ground the earth to do it. They stick their two grounds up into the air, and everything is fine and dandy. Now, what I haven't done yet, I want to work on my simulation of Byron's circuit a little bit more. One of the things I want to do is join the two grounds together and share and remove one capacitor so that they share the same capacitor and they no longer are grounded at that point, because the simulator has forced me to make use of all those Medusa groundings to perform its work to the extent that now I don't care if I throw away the two grounds that were originally there in the first place, and just have those two grounds connect to each other, but they still have to share one capacitor. So, probably something less than 100 nanofarads, 99 or less. I prefer to use 10 picofarads because that seemed to show the best results as far as the simulation was concerned, because there's always a problem of the simulator stopping short. And in this particular, it happens most of the time when I try to simulate over Unity, I get error messages. The simulator can't handle it. When the power level keeps increasing, it just can't stand it. That's why I liked the mathematical proportionality among the three types of mutual inductances, because it was so fluid and so seamless, it just allowed the simulator to go to any length of time you want to go. I think so. Yeah, that's right. But most of the time, it's a voltage-oriented buildup rather than a current-oriented buildup. And yet, it's very interesting. I was thinking to myself, all the sources, the voltage sources used in the simulation of Byron, are giving a humongous amount of current, despite their fixed voltage is limited to a microvolt. Two of them batteries, and one of them a sine wave generator. And yet they're giving out humongous amounts of current, not so much the sine wave generator or the mains ground battery voltage source, but the earth source battery is giving out 30,000 amps despite its one microvolt setting. It's a lot of current coming out of those things. Where was I going with that? Well, I'm just amazed and impressed that because despite the fact that it gives out so much current, it accumulates voltage because it has nowhere for the voltage to go. And that's understandable, that it becomes an electrostatic system, even though it's fed by voltage sources that are delivering a humongous amount of current. So it's a strange intermixing of things going on. Yet because, this is one of the stipulations I make in the wiki text. When you don't allow a outlet for current to flow, then it has nothing to do but to turn around and go back the other way. Now, I didn't do a thorough examination to see if I could find the reversal of current anywhere. I was mostly just intent on getting a circuit to work in which all the voltage inputs were a microvolt and nothing was standard conventional 120 volts. It doesn't mean you have to run the sine wave generator at that quantity of paucity of voltage and high frequency. You run it at any voltage level you want. That's your choice. The more voltage you add to the sine wave generator, the more you increase it, the more you can decrease the frequency, because you won't need such a high frequency. But the outcome still remains roughly the same. It doesn't matter how you change the input. The output is always about the same, roughly speaking. And that's because there's no outlet for current to leave the system. And I'm not sure how that would impact its buildup if it were allowed to leak out from the beginning, from the inception. Or do you bring in a switch and open things up afterwards once the voltage is built up? You know, how you play with it once the voltage is built up is a whole other story. I don't know. It's milliseconds that the simulation ran in. I'm not sure how to slow it down so that it, you know, it's either on or off. And when it's on, it's quick. So I'm not sure how to make it take a long time. I did notice that under certain conditions in which the voltage was reduced at the sine wave input and the frequency wasn't high enough to compensate, it did kick on, but it did take a while to kick on. But I think it was, as I recall, it was an extreme kick on. It was not gradual. It just took longer. And then when I kept reducing the voltage input and increasing the... when I kept reducing the voltage input, I had to wait so long that I gave up waiting. It wasn't worth the wait. So I don't know if maybe eventually it would kick on. Maybe a year, you know, it would kick on. I have no way of knowing. That could be another reason why Nathan waited a year, because it just took a damn long time to kick on. Yeah, it's not a gradual, it's a sudden, and it's odd because there's no spark gap to indicate, or a switch to indicate something like that suddenly could happen, but there are capacitors and diodes. So there's still the possibility for solid-state switching taking place, causing that sudden kick-on of an extreme value. Anyway, I think the point of this... Oh, yeah. So the point of the recording was it could be possible that the Amon brothers duplicated Nathan Stubblefield in a mobile unit of their own devising, which means they definitely were pulling energy from their environment, because that's exactly what Byron Brubaker's circuit does. And I suspected that for some time that's what Nathan Stubblefield's circuit was doing, except he was getting it from the Earth. There was nothing man-made nearby to get it from. And it's pretty obvious the Amon brothers were doing something similar, possibly, because he was arrested for stealing energy from the grid, so maybe he was. You know, maybe they didn't make that up or trump up a charge. Maybe it actually was true that he was stealing energy from the grid. I don't know. Obviously, there's no way for me to know, anybody to know at this point. But it could be, a certain amount of dismay, it hit me this evening, that it could be that it's exact, that Nathan Stubblefield, you know, the Amon brothers were doing their mobile version of a Nathan Stubblefield power supply, because then it takes away all the mystery. You know, once the mystery goes, it's no longer exotic and filled with that, ooh, you know, kind of feeling. It's like, oh, is that what it is? Oh, that's nothing. You know, that's the problem with science. It takes away all the gusto. Once you figure something out, it's like, oh, shit. No more mystery to get all gooey over.